Welcome to Business Innovators Radio, featuring industry influencers and trendsetters sharing proven strategies to help you build a better life right now.
Hi, welcome. I'm your host, Gail Nowak. Today, my guest is Lisa Luckett, author of The Light in 9/11, Shocked by Kindness, Healed by Love. Lisa's a TEDx speaker, entrepreneur, and mother of three young adults, and she's also the founder of Cosmina Enlightened Living, a lifestyle brand and social movement based on the foundational elements of warmth, comfort, care, consideration, grace, and decency. As a 9/11 widow, single mother, and breast cancer survivor, Lisa sees the light and silver lining in every situation. Today, she's talking with us about her story, the value in life struggles, and what we can do to build up our emotional resilience. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi, Gail. So nice to see you, hear you, be with you.
So good to be with you, too. So I'm just going to dive right in, and one of the things that came to me about your book that you've just put out and your story, we've known each other for a while now, so I've known your story for a while now. It totally reminds me of the Virginia Woolf quote, "The beauty of the world has two edges, one of laughter, one of anguish." And I feel like 9/11 is so often portrayed as that edge of anguish, and rightfully so, yet your story seems to be the one story, or the one of very few stories out there, that speaks to turning pain and tragedy into something positive and into an opportunity for personal growth. Can you share, you know, how that happened for you? What's your take on that? Why you chose to perhaps focus on the light in 9/11 versus the tragedy of it all?
Okay, so we have to remember we're 17 years later. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this processing, you know, happened over time. And one of the things about 9/11 is it is a collective trauma. So it was experienced simultaneously by everyone in the world, and certainly everyone in our country.
Right.
So regionally, even the Northeast is even further traumatized because it happened right here. People could see it, smell it, taste it. It affected Boston with the flights from Boston. It went all the way to Washington and everything in between. So I have to start there because it was such a massive trauma, and it happened so fast, but enough time, an hour later after the first building was hit, everybody had turned on their television. And so we all watched in real time as those buildings fell around the world. So we're never going – so that's kind of the pinnacle of a traumatic experience that could be experienced simultaneously by – a world population. So as far as like choosing to see the light in that, there's a second side of trauma, which is the daily repetitive traumas, the traumas we live with all the time, the small off-putting remarks that, you know, kind of chip away at our self-esteem and our egos. And so trauma and finding light in our struggle is really kind of why we're here. And that's my, I can say that now 17 years in. As far as getting there, the morning of 9/11 was so shocking and so catastrophic that for me it literally opened a vortex. And I started to receive guidance. And it came to me in the sense of knowing to trust myself and not question anything anymore, what I knew. Actually, stop listening to everything outside of me and all the things, looking for answers from others and just trusting myself that I had the answers, even though I had no idea what that meant. But as a mother of young children, we're mother lions, we're mother, bears. We are going to protect our young. And everything got extremely simple because it became, how was I going to get my kids through this? But I had a lifetime of small traumatic experiences of dysfunctional family living that actually prepared me to, without, subconsciously be prepared to have that take on 9/11, because my life actually prepared me in some very strange ways to handle it.
Hmm. Can you Can you touch on some of those things?
Of course, of course. So, again, this isn't like flagrant self-promotion here, but the point of writing this book that just came out, I need to tell this story, because it's why I think it's my purpose here, is to help take this platform. If I was given the platform and the experience of being a widow of 9/11, it provides and allows a permission to look at things differently. So in doing so, you know, I'm not as judged as others when I might say something a little different, like maybe there's light in 9/11, because I was given so much love, unconditional love from strangers, not friends and family, of course, but from strangers around the country and around the world, that it actually energetically supported me for so long. I mean, it still comes. I still get it. But it was so powerful that it held me buoyant and gave me this kind of protective layer so I could continue going forward in the way I knew to go, which was against the stream and against society and against my parents' wishes, to figure it out. And the reason I was unusually prepared is that Teddy, my husband, had walked down in the first bombings in 1993. He worked for the same company, for Cantor Fitzgerald, which had 658 people lost on 9/11. Hmm. So an enormous number of people. And that same group, Teddy worked there then in 93 and walked down those 105 floors that time.
Wow.
And in that bombing, I was enraged at the terrorists, but nobody else seemed to care. Everybody kind of swept it under the rug, went back to normal a couple months later. So that when it happened the second time, I never got angry again. Because somewhere subconsciously, now again, this is not something I tried to do or not do. This was not an intellectual choice. I was just in it and allowing it to flow. And it washed over me. And part of that was that I never got angry again, because I think subconsciously, I knew they went in by choice. They went back into those targets. Mm-hmm. So there's a strange knowledge to that. And I wasn't so shocked by terrorism. I had already dealt with terrorism before. And
right.
Then his mom was very worried about his health and had lost her husband young. And they never processed the grief properly. So were very victimized by it. And she just constantly talked about him dying of a heart attack, because he was working in a stressful job. He was a little overweight. He had high cholesterol. And of course, he blew her off. But I constantly ran his death through my mind, because she reminded me of it all the time.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Which people do to each other.
Yes.
We do this to each other.
Yeah.
We do.
We do.
All of that worry has energy.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has energy. So all that love energy I was getting before it, before 9/11, I was getting all of hers, and I was absorbing that, and he was blowing it off, so I took it all. And bottom line is, I ran his death through my mind literally hundreds of times, Gail.
Mm.
And I can tell you, sitting here, that the human mind is so powerful. We can get ourselves just as worked up at the idea of an event as the event itself. But we don't ever imagine the good that comes with it, right? The TED Talk, right? It's about this flanking of the godness of the situation. It's human beings rising to the occasion to help you and help each other. But we never conjure that good. We only conjure the bad, because we're still so primitive in our primal brains. We can't imagine ourselves in a good thing, right? So anyway, because of that, within an hour or two after the building fell, and because I was in complete and utter shock, and everybody around me was reacting, so I didn't have to react, I was fine. I was totally calm. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Just incredible. How did 9/11 become a catalyst for getting clear on wanting to help others be able to better handle loss and tragedy?
I have a great generous nature. I'm very generous by nature, and I want to take care of everybody. I'm the one that when something happens, I'll take care of you. And the morning of 9/11, I had a profound and a truly, truly transcendental moment and an existential moment. In a couple hours, I was literally standing and kind of in that description before where I was fine. And I looked around my house and I'm watching all the people, my neighbors and friends who I love, who are so just spinning out of control in their pain and their terror. I mean, it was scary here and people didn't know what to do. And all I wanted to do was help them. And one thing that I have to explain is that, like, I couldn't get my head around the fact that Ted was dead. I knew he was because I'd gone through it in the first bombing, and there was no smoke outside of the buildings in the first bombing, yet when he got home, he was covered in soot.
Right.
So when I saw the smoke the second time, I knew there was no way they lived. No one was going to live through that. But that's your intellectual mind. But you also try and believe and wish and hope. You don't give up. But my logical mind said, yeah, no. they're gone.
Right.
And so I looked around, and I just wanted – so I was in the event of the terrorist attack with everyone very presently. And as a result, I just wanted to help them. And all they wanted to do was help me. What can I do? What can I do? What do you need? You know, what can I do for you? What, blah, blah, blah. And the answer was there was nothing anyone could do.
Right.
The only thing – and so in that moment, I had this voice of knowing that said, Lisa, let them help you, which was the last thing I wanted. You know, being raised in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and, you know, the women's movement and feminism and no way I can do everything. I'm a superwoman. Well, the answer is, oh, yeah, really? No. So I literally surrendered in the logic, in the pull, being pulled by this this force I did not know, that I was literally pulled through this, and I let go of my coveted control, as I say in the TED Talk. I let go for the first time in my life and was overwhelmed by the waves of love and gratitude and humility from showing my vulnerability. And what I did was I touched what it means to be human.
Mm-hmm.
A spiritual, you know, like we are physical beings having a spiritual experience, or spiritual beings having a physical experience.
Right.
You know, and
right.
The fact is, right, so this is so much bigger than us. We're just playing it out here, learning our lessons. And here was my lesson. Let people help you, because it's a cycle. If I block them, then I was going to block them feeding their souls, because they needed to help me. It wasn't an intellectual thing. It was a heart-centered, human need to help me, or they were going to suffer more greatly. So by accepting their love and receiving their love, I was loving them back. It created this cycle. And so now I understand we can't muscle through things. It's being stoic and muscling through is the wrong information. Being vulnerable and allowing help is the right way. That's actually the right avenue. Something like the food pyramid, right, that we've only discovered recently is flipped upside down. We've had it flipped upside down. We've always we are supposed to allow help and help each other, that it's a cycle.
There is sort of this notion of, I think it's changing, but this notion of I can't show my weakness. I can't show my weakness. And it takes a lot of energy to not accept the help, to not ask for the help, to not receive the help. It's actually a lot easier when you finally sort of get to that moment that you got to just sort of let go and be like, okay, you know what? I am totally surrendering. This is a legitimate time to accept help, and I'm going to completely surrender to that.
Right.
And it's so much easier, but for some reason in our minds, it seems like, oh, well, if I do that, then I've given up or I'm weak.
Right, right. When it's really, and here's the great irony, showing vulnerability is the ultimate act of courage.
Right.
Because it's counterintuitive.
Right. Yes.
It's counterintuitive. And I do think it's inherent in the American culture, but I think it's inherent in most cultures. I think it's just where we are as in our human evolution. But America, which the United States, and that's the only thing I can speak to, only, you know, I only know America, but there's a whole nother study beyond this book that's a second book, which is a macro study, which we will get into the explanation of why we're where we are. You know, and the country, our culture is actually adolescent. It's our country's only 242 years old,
mm-hmm.
as compared to our neighbors, global neighbors, who are thousands of years old. We're
right.
We're babies.
Yeah.
And we're babies, and we think we know everything, just like an adolescent teenager. So if we're really teenagers in the scope of the world population, the world society, then our, we don't have humility, which is part of all why we're where we are. So, I mean, I can down the, you know, if I ever get the book completed, you know, drafted, completed, that's where we'll, I'll take it, because it does explain why we're where we are today. If we just back up and get to that 10,000 foot view.
Right.
But
right.
I digress.
We, that's,
I
no, that's totally,
need to go off, but.
It totally makes sense, though. It's funny, that is something that I often, you know, talk about in conversations, you know, just casual conversations of, hey, we're going through our growing pains. This
right.
is just part. Let's not get too crazy about, you know, too worried. Like you were saying, you know, you can get caught up in that negative sort of spiral, that chatter in your mind, and get really. You can really work yourself up, but if you think about it as this is just sort of the normal evolution of things, this is a piece of us growing up. Sure, there's going to be bad things, there's going to be good things, but let's just focus on continuing the evolution. To me, anyway, I don't know, maybe that's just a coping mechanism that I have, but I feel like that's a much better place
actually...
to be than to be like, oh my God, the country is going to pieces. You know,
no, it's not. It's definitely
it's
not. And what we're having is we have amnesia. We forget the 60s and World War II. And we forget all the struggle. We've done nothing but struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But we've never been tested with boots on the ground, you know, on our soil attack. So that's
right.
Where 9/11 is different. You know, we had Pearl Harbor, but it was in the middle of the Pacific.
Right.
You know, and we've had JFK assassinated and the assassinations of the 60s. We had Vietnam, which was a political war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, World War II, which was, you know, the Great War. Well, part of my whole platform is the number one thing I should say is emotional fortitude, emotional education, emotional well-being, mental
mm-hmm.
health, and thwarting the stigma around the shame of admitting you need help. But we all need help, not only in a tragedy. We all need help in life.
Yeah.
Because we're not born knowing this stuff. And quite honestly, where we are today, if I'm 58 and I'm now moving into the senior side of, you know, a parenting and soon into my twilight years. But the truth is that we aren't right now being good role models for our children because we are so scared. We have not found our wisdom. We have not built, I should say, and that's my whole point of doing this, is I want people to recognize what they know in their life experience, because your life is preparing you for your life all the time. It's your path. It's what you were predicated before we got here, depending on how you see things in one form or another. But the bottom line, if this is our path, we're being shown these things so that we learn those lessons. So if you reframe, and this is where I'm ultimately going with all of this, I just want to reframe struggle, and I want to reframe trauma and pain, and just shift in how we see it. We don't have any emotional training because it's always been shamed, and it's always been poo-pooed because we have been in a, if you will, a masculine energetic system, which is clearly breaking, and the feminine energetic system is coming in, and that gets into book three. Which I won't go into at this point because it's just a little too weird. But it won't be weird in 3 or 4 or 5 years. It'll be extremely understandable. It is already. I can explain it in such a way that it actually makes sense. But it's going to require people to give 5 minutes of consideration without defending against me. Just hear my theory. Just hear this thinking. Just quiet your having to be right mode. And all that noise that your parents would say, no, 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 you know, if she can't be wrong, she's talking about something that I've never heard before. So it can't be right. You know what I mean? Like, so that's why this has to progress slowly, because one of the conversations is we have to give ourselves permission to see things in the way we feel are right, not in the way society feels is right, and not in the way our parents thought was right, because the world is very different than the world that our parents lived in, you know, and then my children are living in a very different time than I lived in.
Right.
And we as adults need to scramble to repurpose ourselves, because technology and Google has replaced us as wise counsel, in the sense of knowledge, analytic, intellectual knowledge. But we can never replace a hug, a conversation where you're really hearing someone, looking deeply in the eyes, telling somebody it's going to be okay. That can never come from technology. That can only come from another human. And we, as the adults in the community of the United States right now, really need to refigure out who we are. And that's my point, is to see the value of your life experience, because every single thing we've lived is teaching us what we need for the next thing.
What are some of the things beyond what you sort of just alluded to that we can do differently to build not just our emotional resilience, but kind of our courage to reach out to others?
The number one thing we have to do, Gail, is calm down. We have to calm down and turn off the television.
Oh my gosh, it's so true.
We have to stop listening to the noise and remember what we know. And even the day after 9/11 and the day after that and the day after that and the day after that, you know what? The sun still came up.
Mm-hmm.
And it went down at night. And the only thing that changed in our world was us. And we changed instantaneously with this new rooted terror. 17 years later, the adult population is 17 years older and still pretty much functioning from a full-on fear base.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why the media, even the Weather Channel, is able to feed that terror. It's just literally hitting the trigger all the time. And as you go into therapy, which is what I did, I went into full psychoanalytic analysis. I went into figure it out, not from a victimization mode of did this happen to me? Why did this happen for me? What am I supposed to learn here? I'm going to figure this out if it's the last thing I do, because it's the only way I'm going to be able to make something good come from this, because I will not let those terrorists ever win. But the only way we can do it is in a full 180. And, you know, so in doing so, you learn. So we've got adults, though, 2 years after 9/11, everything's sealed back over. So when you think about the 2 years of unity, patriotism, the best of the human spirit coming forward, unbelievable tenacity, patriotism, just the heart and soul, people literally, they're pain on the surface, but working together, especially the best metaphor is the rescue and recovery workers who dug through that pile in 9 months. It should have taken them 2 years.
Right.
When we have a mission, there is nothing more incredible than the human creature. But we're very vulnerable and very fragile on the other side. And the minute the work stops, and then our purpose of, you know, fixing what, then we're left to our own thoughts, and that's where the trouble is, because we don't have any skills with which to handle that, because it's been repressed, you know, over the years.
Yeah. So what should on the other side of that, you know, if we're surviving or struggling through something, and you know, trauma can be a big collective trauma, like what we're talking about. You can have a single terrorist in your own life, right? Like, I mean, there's so many people, they've been terrorized as children in their family or by a stranger or whatever. So what advice do you have when moving through, so as a survivor, right? You talk about being a survivor versus being a victim. What can we do to move through grieving and healing in a better way, in a more productive way?
Okay, so there's two answers to this. The first answer about grief, my experience of grief, and Ted was the first person I ever lost. I had my parents, and I hadn't had traumatic loss. So my first experience of death and my biggest worry was I'm going to forget him.
Mm.
And what happened immediately was he was with me. Because I chose to decide that he was with me,
mm-hmm.
and follow that intuition. And, you know, when we regroup and we come within, right? So we were talking about, you know, the world is spinning out of control now, because after 2 years, everybody's sealed over further down the dysfunction path and further down the fear path, because now fear was literally lodged in at a cellular level. So now our footing is even shakier. We were young, we were adolescent as a country, and now we got hurt, and now we've literally had our knees taken out from under us. So the grief aspect, what I learned, was grief is a process. There's no going around it. You have to go through it. But it's not, are you going to have the dark night of the soul for a length of time? Yes. Is it always, always with you? No. Because nature gives you a break. And I was fortunate, my children weren't fortunate, but I was fortunate that I had young kids because they could distract me. I could throw myself into caring for them and not be in the place of, oh my gosh, where's Teddy? Because with little kids as a mom in my life day to day wasn't that different because Ted was gone all day. Right. So in my day, in the moment, staying in the moment and allowing grief to process and wash over you in the way it is meant to naturally, not fighting it, not punishing yourself when you don't feel bad, allowing yourself to laugh, allowing yourself to enjoy the moment you're in. I would look at my baby Timmy and smile. He was adorable. I mean, how do I not look at this beautiful face and stay sad?
Mm-hmm.
You don't. Nature won't let you. But we are so self-punishing as humans because, again, we haven't risen to that sage part of ourselves yet. We're still in this primal, very self-punishing place where we don't take care of ourselves. Anything we ask for that's for our own, you know, for self-care is we're told we're selfish. At least that was the message I got, especially as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So allow your grief to process naturally, taking the numbness when it comes, because the pain will come, but it ebbs and flows. And then the second piece is to reframe struggle. So when you study, I was just talking to a friend this morning who was talking about her path through Jesus Christ and, you know, and the suffering and the suffering. And I said, well, you know what? Here's where I differ. Suffering is a victim mentality. Struggle is an offensive position.
Literally a shift. Yeah.
But we've only been taught to be victims. We've only been taught to enable victimization. When I had breast cancer, which, by the way, was my test to see if I had and could, in fact, learn a skill set for trauma management 8 years after 9/11, I get an early diagnosis on a regular scan. So it was, you know, it was a cancer light. Did I have cancer? Yes. Did I eradicate it in every possible way because I had kids and there was no way I was, you know, I was going to leave anything to doubt? No, of course I did. I'm going to take the full treatment, but it was a bad year. I'm not deformed from it. I just had a lumpectomy, so you can't even really see. There's not even a divot because it was underneath. I didn't have a mastectomy so that I look different in the mirror every day. I mean, there's different levels of cancer. And again, this is part of our reactive culture. The minute you hear the word cancer, you feel like it's a death sentence. Well, many cancers are 100% treatable, and many breast cancers are completely treatable, caught early. So the point is that the struggle is how where I'm going with this whole message, and that is instead of looking at your life as why is this happening to me, you just change the preposition. Why is this happening for me? Why am I being shown this? What am I supposed to learn here? And I'm not saying that my life is any easier knowing all this stuff, by the way. I struggle every single day in different ways. I'm just more detached from it, because I recognize it is preparing me for whatever's coming next. It's making me richer and deeper and much more interesting and much wiser so that I'm better counsel to my kids.
And I would imagine better counsel to the people in your community, the people who are hearing you speak, the people who are reading your book. How are you seeing people respond, and are you seeing a positive impact going out there with this platform?
It's incredible, Gail. In a million years, I would never have dreamed it could be this good.
Mm.
And I mean, people literally telling me it's so well written. I read it in one sitting. I have men telling me, and I mean not one or two, like a couple dozen men have told me I read it in one sitting. Many have said, my gosh, Lisa, it's the first book I've read in 20 years.
Wow.
Now, it was written for women. Women read memoirs. right? Women 45 to 65. I was writing for me, for my people, for people my age and my window. My children's friends are reading it. The children of my friends are reading it. My readers are 18 to 86, and they all say the same thing. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. It's so inspiring. You've given up. And what I get a lot is, you're so brave. You're so courageous to expose yourself like this. And if you really know the story, I didn't even touch on a fraction of it. You know, this is just a skimming the surface. I gave you some, you know, I give you real stories because I really want people to believe me when I tell them the next thing. So it's really about building trust.
Mm-hmm.
This book is to meet you, to get to know me. I wish I could know you, you know, the flip side, but so that you can know me. So the next two things I write, you might consider where you might not have before. Because you will know me.
Right.
And you're going to know I'm not, well, I am flaky, but I am really a pragmatic character. Because I think I was given this whole experience because I'm supposed to take what's considered strange in the culture and make it normal. But not from a, you know, twirling around, you know, jumping over rainbows necessarily. This is about having a connection with your higher self.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding that we are literally part of an energetic system that is everything. And we actually are all connected. And 20 years from now, when I've aged out and my kids are in their early 40s, this will be common knowledge. Because I'm only one voice of literally tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of voices that are saying the exact same thing from their awakening, from their traumatic experience. Or they're awakening because one day they just woke up.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be through trauma. Although trauma is a fast track for sure.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you allow it. If you allow it. If you decide to say, you know, I'm going to make this pain useful. So pain is the fast track. If pain, this is one of my theories, is pain wouldn't be in nature if it wasn't necessary. Well, maybe we've been looking at it wrong.
Exactly.
I'm here to tell you, at 58 years old, every single thing will pass and it will be okay.
Yeah.
Always. No matter what it is. No matter how bad it is in the moment. Is it going to be different? Yes. Is it going to be a new normal? Yes. But it will be okay and you will be happy again if you allow it. So back to what you started with the whole conversation, it's choosing. It's choice. But
yes.
But the choice isn't necessarily saying I want to be happy. The choice is saying I'm going to follow my what feels right to me, and I'm not going to listen to that voice in my head that is my parents, society, my teachers, my grandparents, and all of that shame that told me I was wrong. Because I promise you, you follow your instincts and your gut, you're not wrong.
So before we wrap up, is there anything that people should know that we haven't yet covered? I feel like we could have this conversation
for hours. I know. It's like such a tease, isn't it? I know. I feel the same way, Gail, and I have with you since I met you. But and so hopefully this is the beginning of many conversations.
I do
but,
so too.
Yeah, so we'll definitely stay in touch and be in touch. But that anything I can leave people with is that I hope that they will lean in and choose their courage. Lean in, like it's literally that 10 seconds of courage.
Mm-hmm.
That is the unknown, right? And if they say if you are out of your comfort zone, that's when you're learning. Well, if being out of your comfort zone is learning, I should be a super genius by now because I'm never in a comfort zone. but as a result, what happened? I just keep meeting amazing people. The doors keep opening because I let go of trying to orchestrate it and I'm letting it come to me. Right.
Right.
So it's the shift of this 10 degree shift of how we live in our life. Why are we giving other people that much power to judge us when they can't know how we feel or what we need? Why are we allowing that to run our lives? So now is the time to pivot. And that's what we're being given right now. We're being shown this opportunity to pivot and do it in a new way. And so while the world seems like it's going crazy, it's just breaking so that it can be restructured. And like out of the chaos will come order. Because the kids are wired differently than we are.
Mm-hmm.
They're much more collaborative. They don't see gender. They don't see race. They are more open and acknowledge, you know, difference in such a healthy way. And that's how they came here.
Like,
yeah, we affected some of it, but I think they're actually wired a little differently.
Yeah,
as they
so
need
too.
To be, because the future is going to be different.
How can someone find out more about you, Lisa, your book, Cosmina?
So lisaluckett.com, which is lisaluckett.com, or Cosmina, which is the made-up word meaning where coziness meets glamour, or as we say now, where coziness meets kindness, is the Cosmina Enlightened Living website, cozmeena.com.
Until next time, remember, be your best story and share your positive news now.
Thanks for listening to Business Innovators Radio. To hear all episodes featuring leading industry influencers and trendsetters, visit us online at businessinnovatorsradio.com today.